Chapter 5. Emily Perkins, along with the rest of her team, had been able to follow the war game exercise through her helmet visor. Though she was technically dead according to the rules of the game, and the system prevented her from communicating with anyone other than by opening the visor and talking the old-fashioned way, she had access to all the info available to her when she had been alive. She could see the status of each member of her team, including heart rate, breathing, and other bio signs. Her suit was still receiving data through the Green Team tactical data link, and that data was still subject to spoofing and jamming by the Yellow Team. Her access to the TAC link allowed her to see that 3 Yellow Team aircraft had been declared shot down with all hands lost near the river where Irene and Derek had hidden their fighter. The TAC link also reported the Yellow Commander had committed an aircraft and 2 squads of troops to sanitize the flight corridor along the river. But until they could be certain the green threat there had been neutralized, the area was a no-fly zone, and that seriously screwed up the entire Yellow Team assault plan. Emily smiled inside her suit, even as she wished she had fallen in a more comfortable position, because a stump was digging into her back. Ruhar skin suits were great in many ways, their flexibility usually making them superior in comfort and agility to rigid Krestang-powered armor. But at the moment, the flexible nature of a skin suit was causing a throbbing pain in Emily's back. A Krestang suit would have rigidly propped itself against the stump without her feeling it at all, but her Ruhar gear was bent over the stump as if the skin suit did not exist. That was a design flaw in Emily's opinion. Or, she thought with exasperation, maybe there was a setting she didn't know about that could relieve the pressure on her back. The suits did have injectable nanomedicine for pain relief. The units issued to her team had their medical gear modified for human biochemistry, but she was reluctant to use it. Activating a suit's internal medical systems would be reported up to the medical people at Green Team headquarters, and that would prompt questions. She did not want hamsters asking why she needed pain relief when she was merely laying down in a forest. UNEF could not afford for the Ruhar to think humans were any softer than their physical limitations made unavoidable. She grunted as she shifted around inside the suit as best she could. After she had been declared dead, her suit had lost power, its nanomotors inactive. Not only did she not have the advantage of powered movement, the suit was holding her mostly immobile, except for her being able to wiggle a bit inside the material, but it was like trying to adjust her position inside a wetsuit. The damned thing would not move as she wanted, and it did move just enough that she couldn't quite relieve the pressure on her sore back muscles. Skin suits would not allow the wearer to die or be injured. If she had died during the war game by falling into water, the suit would prevent her from drowning, even swim her onto land by itself. Its impressive caretaker feature did not, however, consider the comfort of the occupant. The upper left corner of her visor showed there were more than 16 hours remaining in the war game schedule, and nearly 2 hours until a crew would come to her position to bring the dead and injured out of the exercise area. 2 more hours of a tree stump digging into her. An alarm sounded in her helmet, and her suit immediately returned to full function. The first thing Emily did was roll off the stump, then kneel down to stretch her aching back. She spent several minutes just stretching, bending her sore back and catching her breath, wincing from sharp pain. "Is everyone all right?" she called on the team channel, before wincing at her own reliance on alien technology and flipping up her visor again to breathe unfiltered air. She could see Coulter, Jarrett, and Chaika running easily through the woods toward her, and she envied their youth, for they didn't appear to have stiff muscles from lying on the ground for hours.
"I'm fine, ma'am," Dave changed his reply, red-faced and almost referring to their CO by her first name.
"Why is the exercise over early?"
That level of information was not available to him.
"I hope there wasn't an accident."
"Good point, Chaika. Strebich," Perkins called to her chief pilot. "You two okay out there?"
"Oh, just fine here, Colonel."
Irene's voice was mirthful.
"We're kind of in a swamp near the river here, but we'll get out okay."
Perkins caught the amusement in the pilot's tone.
"What's so funny, Strebich?"
"As a hamster recon team searching for us," Irene laughed, "and they just about had us cornered in this swamp when the exercise ended early. It's a group of cadets, and I gotta think their commander is pissed. We led them on a chase all over these woods for the past couple hours. Now his mission will get scored as a failure.
Got it. Well, screw him, right?
Perkins knew that remark would eventually get picked up by Yellow Team Intel and they'd be unhappy. She also knew her own Green Team would be listening. Perkins hoped they would be amused and impressed by the aggressiveness and fighting spirit of humans.
Colonel Perkins?
Nert snapped a U.S. Army-style salute toward the human commander.
Nerdy, Shauna admonished their young alien liaison. Remember, we don't salute in the field.
Oh, sorry.
Nert's expression was crestfallen.
You humans call that a sniper check?
You got it. Any sniper in the area will target the senior officers first.
Colonel?
Nert was aware that lieutenant colonels were commonly referred to as colonel except in formal settings.
I do congratulate you and your team on a daring and successful mission in this exercise, but the fact that your success caused humiliation for that Yellow Team cadet leader may create a problem for you, for all of us, in the future. He would be a bad person to have as an enemy.
Why? Dave's eyes narrowed. Who is that jerk?
His name is Bift Kolsun,
Nert replied with a slightly puzzled expression.
Biff? His name is Biff?
Dave laughed, and the teen joined him.
Yes, Bift. Why is that funny?
Nert cocked his head, wondering if the gang were playing another prank on him.
I am told that name is similar to a name not uncommon on Earth.
Biff is an uncommon name, unless your enemy is Marty McFly.
Dave thought his own joke was uproariously funny, and he got the others laughing.
Who is Marty McFly?
Nert asked, lost.
Is he a famous hero from Earth history?
Yeah, he's famous, all right. He invented the flux capacitor, Shauna explained. No, that was Doc, what's his name? The guy with the wild hair,
Jesse corrected his girlfriend, which drew an eye roll from her.
Doc Brown, Perkins declared, sometimes annoyed at how conversations among her young team veered off target.
Nert, why would it be dangerous for us to have this Biffed guy as our enemy? He is a senior-level cadet, but he's only a cadet. He doesn't outrank you, and he sure as hell doesn't outrank me.
His mother is a general in our army, and his father is a high-level official in the federal government. He could make much trouble for any of us. My aunt, very strictly, will not use her position to help me, but Biff's parents have many times unfairly secured advantages for him because of their power and influence.
Politics.
Jesse spat on the ground in disgust. The expression on Perkins's face echoed Jesse's disgust, but she couldn't allow her personal feelings to affect their mission. Almost every human interaction, and now every interaction humans had with other sentient species, involved politics on some level. She looked at the UNEF symbol that was now displayed on the left upper arm of her team's skin suits. The composition of UNEF was entirely politics. Only 5 nations were included in the expeditionary force, though several other countries had wanted to contribute soldiers. Being excluded had been a blow to national pride, and Perkins was sure there were still hard feelings about that back on Earth. Brazil had argued strongly in the UN Security Council that their army should participate in the X-Force, but that country's lack of nuclear weapons meant that Cristang did not take the Brazilians seriously. Emily wondered if the army of Brazil knew how lucky they were to have dodged that bullet. She also noted that the influence of Nert's aunt, Baterna Logelia, was the reason the boy was a member of Perkins's team.
Okay, people. We have enough enemies in this galaxy. Let's not go making more. We treat this Biffed cadet with respect, got it?
Yes, ma'am,
Shauna agreed stiffly.
But if that punk-ass kid disrespects one of us...
She looked at Nert, and the team understood how protective she felt about the goofy young alien.
I am not taking any crap.
Jarrett, if this Biffed character needs slapping down, I will handle it myself. Perkins also treated their young alien team member with motherly concern. The alien senior cadet had taken particular pleasure in the simulated killing of Nert, and Perkins wanted more info about that.
Nert, do you and this Biff have a history? Anything we should know about?
No, we do not have a history. Nert shook his head in the exaggerated fashion he had learned to use when communicating with humans.
We barely know each other at school.
I think, the young Ruhar looked at the sky while he thought of the correct phrase.
I think he is just a dick.
Hearing that word come from Nert's mouth and his totally serious expression made the team double over with laughter.
Nert, Shauna said, wiping tears from her eyes. Where did you hear that expression?
Did I not say that correctly?
Nert's eyebrows scrunched together with concern.
I was taught that expression by soldiers and your American 3rd Infantry Division. At first my translation told me it was a slang for...
He looked away from Shauna with great embarrassment.
Male genitalia? Then it was explained to me that calling someone a dick means they are sort of a huge douchebag?
Perkins laughed so hard she almost choked, and Dave patted her back.
Oh,
she looked at the alien cadet when she was able to talk again. Nert, you truly brighten my day.
Is what I say funny because I am not saying it correctly?
The cadet looked to Shauna for guidance, his lower lip quivering slightly.
No,
Shauna assured him. You are using the expression correctly, and you are 100% right that this biffed character is a huge douchebag. She bit the inside of her cheek to stop herself from laughing. What makes it extra funny is that we do not expect to hear you using human slang.
Oh!
Nert perked right up at hearing Shauna's explanation.
Yes, the humor comes from the incongruity of...
He stopped because he was smart enough to know jokes can't be explained. Trying again, he simply stated,
The humor comes from the fact that all species can agree biffed is a dick.
Nert,
Perkins shook her head, grinning broadly.
Maybe you should tell Dave and Jesse what other expressions you learned from those jokers in the 3rd Infantry,
Yes, ma'am,
Nert grinned back.
They taught me many interesting and useful sayings. For example, several of the male soldiers kept saying they wanted something very badly, and my translator told me they were using a term for a feline pet animal from Earth. That puzzled me. Then I learned what they wanted was some sweet puss.
No, okay, Dave patted Nert on the back, hard. Let's you, me, and Jesse talk about that, huh? Senior Cadet Biffed Colsoon was indeed pissed, monumentally pissed. Not only had a group of lowly humans suckered him into leaving his assigned patrol area along the river, but when he broke the war game rules to run back to the river and chase the two human pilots, they had slipped away and evaded him for hours until he had them cornered in a swampy area and was about to send two of his team to circle behind and trap them. Just then, the alarm had sounded to end the war game, cheating him out of even a minor victory. He had broken the rules and would be punished, and now he had nothing to show for it. At least if he had captured the human pilots, he might have been able to justify his actions as preventing the humans from getting away with cheating, since cheating is the only possible way two slow and clumsy human pilots could have shot down three Ruhar aircraft.
Come out!
He shouted, brandishing his rifle toward where he knew the pair of primitive creatures were huddled behind a large tree.
Okay,
Irene stood up, brushing muck off her flight suit's legs from when she and Derek had been crouching behind a tree. She waved her arms to show her pistol was still in the holster strapped to her hip.
The war game is over, anyway. You got lucky, and you cheated!
Biffed shook a fist at her and pointedly did not lower his rifle, even though the weapon could only fire low-powered targeting laser beams.
I will be reporting your shameful underhanded tactics to the war game authorities!
Cheated? Derek retorted hotly.
We cheated? You cheated! You're supposed to be dead, you punk-ass bitch. That's why we were able to track your position, but you couldn't locate us. The control system cut off your suit's chameleon and stealth features.
Derek looked at Irene as he spoke, as he had just then figured out why the two of them had been able to evade the team of four Ruhar for hours. While their flight suits were not fully capable combat skin suits, they did provide enhanced speed and power, plus features for concealment. During the chase, Derek had wondered why their flight suit's sensors had been able to detect and pinpoint movement in the forest, while it appeared the four Ruhar had only a vague idea where the humans were.
Now it was obvious, as lights on the chests of the four Ruhar were blinking red, indicating the wargame computer had declared them all dead. The four, who Derek now could see for certain were cadets, should not have been able to move after dying in the game.
Dead soldiers are not supposed to be chasing us. We will be reporting your actions to the referees.
Derek did send a message to the wargame computer for the attention of the referee committee that enforced the rules and investigated possible violations by both sides. All he did was transmit a file containing sensor data after they left the Dobra, showing he and Irene had been tracked and pursued by four Yellow Team soldiers, and including a short video of their encounter with the cadets after the war game ended. Derek's intention was to show the referees that if the humans had done anything that slightly bent the spirit, if not the stated rules of the mock combat, the four Yellow cadets had flagrantly violated the rules by continuing to participate in the action after they had been declared dead. He figured the rules committee would have to go easy on the humans when they saw how badly their own people had cheated. He was correct, and he had no way of knowing Lieutenant Colonel Perkins would have preferred to keep the whole incident quiet, and she was still mildly pissed at him for acting without checking with her first.
"I'm sorry, ma'am," he replied as the assembled six humans waited for a green team transport to pluck them from an open area next to the river.
A Yellow ship had already picked up the four cadets, and another Yellow transport had landed across the river next to the bog where the abandoned Dobra sat partly submerged in a bog. Through his Z-phone, Derek had been watching a Ruhar dressed in the blue and yellow uniform of an aircraft mechanic slogging through the bog to the Dobra, then crawling on top and around it. He could not hear the communications from the mechanic to the airbase, but from the man's gestures, Derek guessed the mechanic was anything but pleased.
"I wouldn't have done anything," he stated truthfully, for he assumed the wargame computer had noticed the four dead cadets breaking the rules by running around. "But that cadet said he was going to report us for cheating, so I thought the best defense is a good offense."
Emily Perkins knew sports metaphors were as popular in the military as war metaphors were in sports, and she found both to be silly. War was not a game, and even the most intense football game was not combat. Quarterbacks could be hit hard by 300-pound linemen, but no one was shooting at the quarterback, nor did the quarterback need to worry about being targeted by laser-guided missiles from over the horizon. In spite of her feelings on the subject, she avoided rolling her eyes at the pilot. "In the future, check with me first. I am responsible for the actions of this team, so any reporting should be done by me directly."
"We did nothing wrong," Irene protested while touching Derek's hand reassuringly.
"None of us did anything wrong. The operation was flawless," Perkins agreed. "That doesn't mean there won't be any blowback on us. We really crashed a real aircraft." She used the word "we" because she had approved the crazy operation, and Emily Perkins did not hang her people out to dry when they went off script in good faith. Strebitch and Bonsu had followed the spirit of the war game by acting the way they would in real combat. The fact that the wargame computer did not declare them dead after the hard landing proved the desperate tactic of splashing their fighter across the river surface had worked. "Nert," she nodded toward the team's official liaison officer, "tells me that cadet leader you encountered is politically connected. He could make a stink about us destroying a combat aircraft, even get your flight certifications revoked or suspended."
"What?"
Irene screeched in rage. Perkins held up a finger to forestall an argument. "That is why I didn't want us reporting that cadet for violating the wargame rules. The computer must know what he did, and the hamsters will deal with it or not." She shrugged. "Now we have forced their hand by bringing the incident to the referee committee, because they will have to address it, and the cadet will blame us, fairly or not." She paused to listen, and the entire group turned toward the south where an aircraft was beginning to transition from level flight to hover mode, its turbine engines pivoting to support the craft's landing next to the river.
"Everyone," she raised her voice to be heard over the approaching roar of the aircraft, "let me do the talking when we get back to base."
"They cheated!"
Biff jabbed a finger awkwardly close to Perkins' face when they reached the Yellow Team headquarters.
"Hiding a frontline Dobra fighter gunship in a river is not an approved..."
"Approved,"
General Days cut off Biff's argument with a withering stare. Cadet, do you think in real combat the Kristang will conform to an approved set of tactics? I can assure you they will not. Neither will the Wargalin or any other force we may encounter. If you are unfortunate enough to face the Kristang in battle, you can expect they will hit you with every dirty trick they can imagine, and they will not care whether you have a preset set of tactics to counter them. If your rigid thinking is an example of what our military academies are teaching now, Dace shook his head sadly, then our people had better become accustomed to losing battles and territory. Lieutenant Colonel Perkins, he turned to the human leader, speaking slowly to pronounce her rank correctly as a sign of respect. Your team has once again proven to be resourceful. Clever. He paused to see if that word translated correctly, and continued when Perkins nodded happily. And courageous. If the operation had not worked as planned, the repercussions to human involvement with our military could have been long-lasting and detrimental to your people here on Getanu and beyond. While I am not pleased to be on the losing side of your unexpected success, his grin reflected the chagrin he felt, I am glad this was only a war game exercise, so we can learn much without getting anyone killed.
They destroyed a frontline combat aircraft, Biff insisted, proving he did not know when to cut his losses and keep his mouth shut.
They did damage an aircraft, yes, General Days agreed. Cadet, you will find aircraft are frequently damaged in combat.
That was not real combat, Biff nearly shouted.
When he heard others gasp that he had interrupted a general officer, he bowed his head.
I apologize, General, sir.
Days snorted and looked down his furry snout at the cadet.
A war game is only useful if the people involved act the way they would in actual combat. Colonel Perkins, I understand your military organization has a motto to the effect of train the way you fight.
We believe that very strongly, General Days, Perkins replied with deadly seriousness.
Days nodded approvingly.
We use technology to make wargame exercises as realistic as possible. But if the people involved, he glared directly at Biff, do not act as if the combat is real, they learn nothing.
Tell me, Perkins, why did you plan to sacrifice your ground team and possibly your only aircraft?
Perkins had an answer ready because she only needed to tell the truth. Because my team had multiple significant disadvantages in both physical ability and experience with your equipment and tactics. The only possibility for us to contribute to mission success was to use unconventional tactics. Otherwise, we could have stayed back at base like some people wanted us to do.
Quite so, Days said with admiration. Cadet Kolsun, I suggest you throw away whatever texts the Academy has assigned you to read, and instead study the actions of Colonel Perkins, both today and from the events of them activating Mazer projectors and destroying a Kristang battle group, a real battle group, he added for emphasis. As to the Dobra fighter that was damaged, he downplayed the damage to the aircraft, which had been declared a total loss and was being salvaged for parts. The aircraft logs stated was not actually combat capable and should never have been assigned to participate in the exercise. It was not, as you described, a front-line combat aircraft. It was a source of spare parts, and now it is fulfilling its true mission. General Days actually winked to Perkins. That our counterparts on the Green Team stuck the human pilots with that barely capable piece of... The translator stumbled, and Perkins heard it say junk in her ear, but she thought Days had used a stronger term.
It's shameful, and does not reflect well on us as a people.
Colonel Perkins, Days bowed slightly, please convey my apologies to your pilots. Your team succeeded despite having the deck stacked against you.
Perkins bowed curtly to acknowledge the compliment, and her eyes twinkled. Have you ever gone into actual combat without
having the deck stacked against you, General Days?
No, the Ruhar commander chuckled. I have not. Cadet Durndorf, he addressed Nert. You intend to continue serving as liaison officer with Colonel Perkins?
Nert brightened up immediately.
Oh, yes, sir, General Days, sir,
he replied with pride, throwing his shoulder back and standing tall.
You are a fortunate young man, and if you keep your mind open and learn, I expect great things from you.
Oh,
Nert swallowed hard as he realized the pressure on him.
Sir, I hope to serve with distinction, sir.
He nervously ignored Jesse's instruction not to make a sir sandwich when speaking to an officer.
Cadets, you are dismissed.
Days sent Nert and Biff away with a curt nod and turned his full attention to Perkins, gesturing her to follow him as he walked toward his command center.
I have a call with the Admiral in only a few minutes, but please walk with me and indulge me in a question, Colonel. How did you get the idea to hide a fighter aircraft in a river? Sensors aboard my aircraft that were declared shot down did briefly detect a submerged anomaly, but the crews ignored it. That will be a lesson learned to go straight into the standard operations manual.
It was Captain Derek Bonsu's idea. Perkins felt a jolt of pride that lowly humans had taught another lesson to the Ruhar. He was assigned to an airbase before and during the Kristang occupation. She smiled, and did not mention that Bonsu had been taken off flight duty back then and limited to being basically a gopher for the aircraft maintenance teams. He observed a Dobra fighter being subjected to something you call a water immersion test. He was surprised to see that after being in a water tank for several hours, the fighter was able to pass flight tests and return to service with minimal maintenance.
Yes. The general's face lit up with understanding. I remember that. The company that builds the Dobro was testing one fighter from the batch delivered to Gatanu as part of a service contract. That aircraft has what I think you call a ditch switch to close external ports in case of a water landing. But the purpose of that test is also to demonstrate the aircraft will not be damaged by flying through heavy rain or by fire suppression equipment in a hangar.
Heavy rain? Perkins's eyebrows flew up. That must be some seriously heavy rain.
Our aircraft must be capable of operating in extreme environments, Days explained, because we never know what planet we will be called on to occupy next.
Ah. Perkins made a mental note to remember that lesson. She could no longer afford to think only in terms of conditions on one planet, whether that was Earth, or Paradise, or Camp Alpha. She needed to consider what her team would do under conditions she could barely imagine.